good morning, afternoon, or evening, and welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Network. The following show is just horrifying. Beware.
Welcome back to Horror Queers. We're talking mayo sandwiches, we're talking side ponytails, and we're talking some truly shitty water polo. And I'm Joe.
And I'm Trace, and we're talking mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the Lydia Dietziest of them all?
Oh,
I really need to stop laughing at my own joke when I do that. I hate when people do that on podcasts, but
I think you're fine. I think people like it. Now, that reference, not so much, unfortunately.
Oh, man, it is egregious, and they had to know what they were doing, but I'm sorry, getting ahead of myself. Everyone, we are discussing Marina Sargenti's, I'm going to say Sargenti, maybe Sargenti, but Maria Sargenti's 1990 film, Mirror, Mirror, which, man, it's a movie.
It is a movie. Yes, it's a direct-to-video movie. It is a almost entirely female crew and also mostly female actors. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know. Like, I kind of liked a lot of this, and there's a couple of things I don't care for, but overall, this was a pleasant surprise.
So for both of us, this is a first-time watch, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so yes. As listeners know, you know, we kind of go back and forth sometimes when we're watching movies and we're like, oh my God, like I'm watching this and blah, blah, blah. And I was messaging you like, I was like, I'm 40 minutes in and I'm really, really liking this. And
mm-hmm. And then I saw your 3-star rating.
Yes. No. So it's a movie where I was really into the first half and the last half started to lose me. And then the ending, which I don't hate, it just like, it kind of lost me a bit. So I was like, oh, like, I don't know if it's a budgetary thing. Actually, I'm sorry. It's a combination of budgetary issues and screenwriting issues, because I do think that this movie loses sight of what it should be doing. So yeah, it is a 3-star film, but it's still one that I would heartily recommend because I think there's a lot to like about this movie.
Indeed, yeah. And I kind of like that it's so bold in its homages that it's almost wearing them on its sleeve, or in the case of Megan's character, on her head and in her makeup and in her hair. But yeah, I don't mind at all that this is basically Beetlejuice meets Heathers meets Carrie meets the craft. Like, I kind of like it for all those reasons.
Well, this came out before The Craft, so I mean, like, we can, you know, eschew that comparison. But again, like, I see what you're saying, and I thought the exact... I think the Carrie comparison is the most apt, just in terms of what is happening in this film. I don't think it necessarily pulls off our character switch, because... I mean, we'll get into it in the plot, but it basically, like, says, oh, it's the demon controlling her. It's at a certain point. I don't really know what that point is, to be honest.
Well, I almost feel like she gives in to the demon, and as a result, then the demon can just act on her behalf. But yeah, I wish that there was a stronger moment where we saw Megan, I don't know, like, she never really admits what she's doing is wrong, so it just kind of seems like, oh, she's decided to become homicidal.
I think the point where she fucks the mirror is meant to be the turning point.
Oh, sure. No, that much is clear. There's definitely mirror fucking and licking in this movie, and it's great for it. I think it's one of the standout scenes.
Oh, no. It is, you know, because, like, so many things have been copied and whatnot, especially in horror films, like, you know, but... It's rare for me to see a film that is, I mean, let's say 1990 and before, that makes me go, oh shit, mm-hmm. Like, I've never seen anything like that before. Mm-hmm. And that one did that. This scene did that.
I do think that they had to get a little enterprising with the way that some of this comes about. And I think as a result of some of those maybe financial limitations that force them into some creative boxes like mirror fucking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, hey, sometimes that's when the best stuff comes out. And in this particular scene, that is what happened.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Well, Joe, I mean, I'm a little light on production today because there is shockingly little information to find about this movie. So, yeah, you are correct. So this is a feature directorial debut for music video and commercial director Marina Sargenti. And the cast and crew is 60% female. So it's majority female, not entirely, but we're getting there. Honestly, I think that's the one of the few factoids that you can find about this film. You know, good for it.
Dude, this is 1990.
No, I know.
Like, this is a huge achievement. It's actually one of the reasons that we decided to program this, because it's been a while since we've had a female director that we've covered. But also, I just think this film is really notable for making those kinds of strides, because we see people championing their films now as like, oh my god, this is mostly female directed, and people are falling over themselves to praise it, as we should be. But to me, this means that Sargenti was a trailblazer in that way.
No, I 100% agree with you. And it's not just her, because it's also the writing team. So there's four writers, but the two main writers, so we've got Annette Cascone and Gina Cascone. It might be Cascone again. That might be an Italian thing that I don't really know how to pronounce. And then we have Sargenti as a co-writer as well, and then Yuri Zeltzer. But the Cascones, they're a sister duo, and they're really only known for film for this. They did write two of the three sequels this movie has.
Oh my gosh.
They wrote Mirror Mirror 2 Raven Dance and Mirror Mirror 4 Reflections. Apparently Mirror Mirror 3 The Voyeur is so bad that I guess they came back for the fourth one to be like, we'll write this wrong.
We will polish this script up because you have tarnished the brand.
Pretty much. Which, I mean, again, I had never honestly heard of this movie until you programmed it. So I was like, all right, well, here we go. Well, you know what? That's kind of a lie. I did hear whenever Oculus came out, I heard a lot of rumblings from people that obviously knew this movie from their like video store days that were like, that's just ripping off Mirror Mirror. And I was like, well, I mean, there's a killer mirror.
Also,
in both.
Horror movie X. Like, I can definitely see the comparisons, but at the same time, horror movies lift pretty liberally from each other on the regular.
Because how many horror movies the killer mirror are there? Not many, but that's really where the comparisons stop for me. Like, none of this is really the same, but I digress. So yeah, the Cascones, though, they're the authors of a book series called Dead Time Stories. It's middle school grade horror books, originally published under the name A.C. Cascone. They have also written several episodes of the Nickelodeon TV series that is based on those books, and that's like in the last 10 years.
Oh, really? Okay, good to see that they're still working.
Yeah, I mean, like, they move from something like this. So their 90s were spent doing this, because I think all four of those of the Mirror Mirror films did come out before 2000.
Okay.
Writing the books in the aughts and then doing the show in the 2010s.
Well, that's really encouraging, because unfortunately a lot of people associated with this film, this is one of their final credits. Like, Sargenti directed an episode of Xena Warrior Princess. Mm-hmm. And then star Rainbow Harvest, this is basically one of her last credits. She retired, I think, in 1991.
Yeah, she did like two TV movies after this and then quit. But P.S., what a name.
Oh my god, the name is goddamn delightful, and she is goddamn delightful. I think she's a great actress, and I was really disappointed when I saw that she's not acting anymore.
No, I 100% agree, and to turn it back around to the film, like, I was disappointed when the third act doesn't really give her a lot to do. Like, she's the protagonist of this film up until a certain point when it switches, and Nikki, Kristen Dottillo's Nikki, who's basically our Sue Snell stand-in in this movie, it then becomes the main character, and that's kind of when it loses me, but...
A little bit, and not because of Nikki, because I also think that Nikki is kind of a great character, and maybe that's why it's giving me the Craft kind of vibes, because it feels like this film doesn't quite know how to play off the animosity between women in a meaningful way.
I agree, and yeah, I should say yes. I don't mind that Nikki becomes the main character. I mind that it's at the expense of Megan. Like, why can't we have them both be equal protagonist at the end of this movie? Unfortunately, the film just forgets Megan exists.
A little bit, yeah. There's, you know, some fun astral projection stuff that we'll get to, but for the most part, it really is the Nikki show.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, this film, first of all, it was a Cannes premiere. It premiered May 11th, 1990 at Cannes, before getting released theatrically in the United States on August 31st of that year, opening first in Detroit, before also screening at the Chicago International Film Festival in October of that year. Now, I was really confused because I could not find any box office information. I have no idea how much money it made. I don't know what the budget for this movie was.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. It was one of a flood of lower budget titles released during the home video boom of the 90s.
Yeah.
They would be given very limited theatrical runs merely as a formality to perhaps secure, let's say, a slightly better shelf space or a late night cable syndication deal.
It's weird. It's almost like the Netflix model of, oh, we're going to debut our most prestigious films in theaters in a couple of cities, but for the most part, you're streaming at home.
That kind of is what it is. And there was a big draw on this VHS art box. It was a lenticular case. So the mirror part of the cover was actually like a mirror.
Fuck yes. Oh my God, I love that.
Well, that was kind of what was so, I mean, again, this is something that is, it's a lost art, because you can peruse any streaming service, and there aren't, like, these covers. Honestly, the closest thing I've gotten to recapturing, like, video store of the 90s magic is Tubi. Only because they have all of these shitty-ass horror movies that I remember seeing on, like, Sci-Fi or on those Blockbuster shelves as a kid, because it was all these, like, fucking low-budget direct-to-video movies.
Indeed. And we should make it clear, we're not shitting on these movies as, like, necessarily being bad, although I'm sure some of them are. Yeah. It's more the fact that there's a level of quality and taste that you would have seen in a video rental store that we're just not really seeing anymore. So it's like Tubi is the one that kind of gathers them up.
100%. We discussed Tubi. I mean, there was a period where we discussed Tubi a lot, and I remember saying, I was like, it's just like, it was a nostalgia factory, because there are so many things on here that I remember seeing the covers for as a kid that I never got to watch because I was too young to watch them.
Right.
And it makes me want to go back and watch them. One of the covers that always stood out to me was this random horror movie called Bleeders, and it has these, like,
oh God,
humanoid, disgusting alien monsters on the cover. And it always scared the crap out of me as a kid, and I swear to fuck, I saw it on Tubi, and I was like, I've never seen that, and I'm sure it's absolute horseshit, but I really want to watch it.
Well, right, and where else are you going to see it? And I like the fact that you brought it back to movie covers, because there is something so evocative and nostalgic about this. Like, we both participated in Adrian Torres's project last year.
Yes, to be or not to be.
Thank you. I was like, I know it was a pun.
It was a pun.
But we also selected a film that we wanted to highlight that was available on the service to bring a little bit more attention to it, because, you know, Tubi is one of those things where it's like, it's free and you just have to watch the occasional ad. But they've also got movies on there that you don't find anywhere else. And that was where I had the opportunity to watch The Uninvited, which is the Cat Within a Cat movie that I've always wanted to see. But like, I don't have $30 for an Arrow or a Vinegar Syndrome Blu-ray.
Oh, they have Tobey Hooper's Crocodile, which is not a good movie, but something that I watched on Sci-Fi, I want to say at least once a month in the year 2000.
Oh my God, I love that for you.
No, but I mean, yeah, it's really a lost art. Like, did you have those moments as a kid when you would go peruse the video? Because I know that your horror upbringing came later, but that doesn't mean that you couldn't walk the horror aisle, which is something I always did as a kid.
Oh, absolutely. And I know that people have a lot of nostalgia with their local either mom and pop shop, or maybe you were only allowed to go to a Blockbuster for whatever reasons. But I had something called Jumbo Video, and it was one of those fantastic video stores that actually had a specialty section just for horror films. So it wasn't like, oh, there's regular aisles all over the place. This was like in the back left-hand corner.
Oh, it's like the porno section.
Kind of. I think there was also a porno section on the right-hand side, but I never went to that part because I was too young.
I've never been to a video store with a back room. Like, I've never been to one.
I mean, they definitely don't exist anymore, but I think they were kind of like run out of town after a certain point.
No, I know, but like, even as a kid, like, I mean, like, we were a Blockbuster family, but that's because we didn't, I don't even think we had a mom and pop shop in our neighborhood.
Right.
Ironically, until like my college years, and obviously that didn't last very long, but I've never been to a video store that had a back room for porn.
Right. Well, anyway, I don't know that you're missing that much. Anyway, shut the fuck up. So, so they had this moat, and then it would take you into kind of a castle turret, and
what?
Yeah, it was like a 360 of just horror movies on like four different shows, and they had different music playing, and I think sometimes they would even have smoke and stuff to make it more atmospheric. And I would just always go in there. Like, my family would be looking for regular movies, I'm using air quotes, and yep. I would just go in there and just do 360 pans the whole fucking time, looking at all of these gorgeous, mostly 80s covers. And the one that always struck me was The Mutilator, because it looked like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because it's all just people on hooks. And I was like, what is happening in this movie that these people are on hooks?
Have you seen The Mutilator since?
I've never actually seen it.
Okay, we're not talking about Mirror Mirror right now, but I actually blind bought the Blu-ray because I think it's an Arrow Blue, and the original name was Fall Break, and you can actually watch the cut with like the Fall Break title card. But
oh, fun!
It has a title theme song called Fall Break, like people singing Fall Break.
No, that is fantastic and terrible.
It's pretty bad. I don't really like the movie that much, but it's dumb fun.
Oh, no. I mean, that's the best part about these, right? Like, half the time the films were absolute garbage, but the cover art was a thing of beauty.
Well, and so that's the thing. You know, I mean, I'm super jealous of this horror section with a moat and whatever. Like, I would kill to see pictures of this. I'm sure they don't exist. But yeah, I mean, for me, you know, we've gone through my origins of horror fam where I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated films. So I would peruse the horror aisle and literally flip every box looking for one that wasn't rated R. So I came to know these covers so intimately. Like, again, Bleeders is one that always stuck out. The Dentist 1 and 2, the Corbin Burnson ones, like those covers were always really striking. But like things that I discovered Tremors this way, because Tremors was PG-13, I think. And I was like, cool, I get to watch that. I got to watch this really shitty movie called King Cobra with Pat Morita about a giant king cobra.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Komodo with Kevin Zegers. Like,
yes. Oh, my God. I love Komodo.
No, I do too.
So terrible. So good.
So, I mean, again, such fond memories. And while I didn't have the same experience with Mirror Mirror, I think a lot of people did, because I've noticed more. I mean, I try to do more researching and like Googling, oh, like, are there think pieces about this film? Spoiler alert, there aren't really. But when I posted, I was watching, I saw people that were like, oh my God, this is one of those like mainstay video rentals for me as a kid.
Yeah, I can imagine it got a lot of play on television when that started to become like a syndicated thing, because this is perfect. Like, you're not going to scare too many people. I can imagine girls renting this for slumber parties and that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah,
I'm hesitant to even call it gateway because some of the stuff in here is actually pretty horrifying. Like Charlene getting mutilated in the steam is actually quite upsetting, but this also feels sort of tame in a lot of ways.
Well, and you know, the whole time I was watching, I was like, this feels like a TV movie to me.
Yeah.
This doesn't feel like a theatrical release. I mean, I watched it on Amazon because it's streaming on Prime, although I think it's also on Shudder, so I don't know if the quality's better.
Hmm.
But the quality looks like a VHS transfer. Like, it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
I guess, too, when I was watching, I was kind of judging it on those terms. Like, I wasn't scrutinizing this film with the same scrutiny that I would give to something that was a more mainstream theatrical release. And maybe that's unfair, but that's just kind of how my brain works.
I mean, I think we'll get into it. I did manage to find one pretty decent reading from Kate Hagen, who I follow on Twitter, and she's delightful and lovely. She talks about erotic horror, she talks about erotic thrillers quite often. So she's one of my favorites for that. But yeah, I found a piece that she did on like 31 Days of Feminist Horror, and she really chalked this film up as one of those, I was about to say seminal. What's the Ovester term for seminal?
Ominal?
Yeah, I guess.
Ovominal.
Ovominal, yeah. She talked about it as an ovominal, a horror film for girls. And I got a couple of good choice pieces out of her article. But yeah, it feels like this is one where I think when this episode drops, people will be like, oh, right, I remember watching that. But it's probably not a mainstay for a lot of folks.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this movie did get reviewed when it came out. Like, I mean, so it's not on Rotten Tomatoes, but Entertainment Weekly did give this a B- when it was released.
Okay.
On Rotten Tomatoes, it is one of the few films without a tomato meter score because there are only two reviews for it. Both more, I'm going to say more contemporary. They're both posted like after the year 2000.
Right.
But one is good, one is bad.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we can edge that up with this.
Yeah. And we've got a Letterboxd score of 5.8 out of 10. So, you know, it's pretty, I think that's pretty on par. Because again, like, for me, that's basically a 3 out of 5.
Right. Yeah, I think you said 3 out of 5. I'm somewhere between a 3 and a 3.5.
I think that's fair. I mean, again, we'll We'll see if either one of our minds change as we discuss this, which we can start now.
All right. So, we open with some old-timey music in the late 1930s.
50s.
No, her diary says 1939.
It does say 1939, but the music is the 50s.
Is it?
Yes. Let's not cut this out, because I'm curious, because this is stupid. The Wikipedia plot does say the 50s, but... Okay. But the music, to me, cues me to the 50s. But you are correct in that it does say the 1939 in her journal. So I don't know. I don't know if that's an... Again, maybe I'm wrong, or maybe the movie is confused.
Right. I mean, some of the details do get a little lost in translation in this script, so mm-hmm. I'm not surprised that we're already struggling with this. But okay, so yep. We open in the far a past, decade. We'll say. A decade. There was a decade in time. That's where we open. Most important to know, we are introduced to Mary Weatherworth, and she is played by Tracy Lee Gold. And basically, our introduction is a cold open. We see her stabbing her twin sister, Elizabeth, who is played by Michelle Gold, mm-hmm. to death in some kind of...
Well, so we don't really know what it is yet, right? Like, we just know that she's killing her. We know the mirror. Oh, obviously, we're watching a movie called Mirror Mirror, so we know the mirror is, like, something to do with it.
But there's this interesting moment where it seems like something is trying to come through the mirror, and then it closes again. And I'm not gonna lie, considering how female-driven this film is, I was like...
A vagina hole?
Is that a vagina?
Yes. I wrote, the mirror gets a vagina hole and then closes after the woman dies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm glad to see we're on the same page with
we
this.
We are. Two men who like men noticing vagina holes.
That's what this podcast is all about. Hell, that's the alternative title of this podcast. So then we get some credits, and now we're up to the present day, which is presumably 1989, 1990. Sure. So, we are introduced to antique shop owner Emmeline, who is played by the wonderful Yvonne DiCarlo.
So, most people will know her as Lily Munster from The Munsters. That's great. I actually don't really know her from much else.
No, me neither. Like, you had it on the cheat sheet, and then when I put her into the search, the Google search, it was like, oh yeah, okay, I recognize her, but she looks so different to me out of makeup.
Yes. She's had a very, I'm sorry, she's also in The Ten Commandments. That's one thing I've seen that movie, so, like, I know I've seen her in it, but, like, I couldn't tell you who she is in that movie.
Oh, I see. Okay, I have no relationship to that movie.
Catholics, baby.
I mean, good on you. Yeah, I've seen some people compare her role to Poltergeist.
Yes, so of Zelda Rubinstein, and apparently she was supposed to have a role in this movie, but she had to back out for undisclosed reasons. Now, I have to assume this was the role.
Oh, right.
Like, there's no other role this could have been.
No, I 100% think so, and I 100% think that if she backed out for any other reasons, then, oh, I've already played this role in a bigger franchise. No, thank you.
I think this would have come out, like, oh god, I'm not gonna look it up, but, like, around the time of Poltergeist 3, and I wonder if just, like, with everything with Heather O'Rourke dying and, like, the horrible shit that movie went through, if, like, maybe she was like, I'm taking a break. Like, I'm not gonna do this shit.
I'm done playing mystic spiritualist, thank you.
Yeah, but yeah, so this character, Emmeline, I mean, Yvonne DiCarlo must have been on set for 3 days, because she is constantly by herself,
yes,
delivering exposition about this mirror.
Mm-hmm, which I love, because it's only for our benefit.
Yeah, no, she's reading out loud to herself, and it's like, why are you reading? Like, why are you doing this?
I mean, my God, give her a cat or something that she can at least play off of.
It also takes her several days to make it through this journal. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't think there's, like, that much material that would require you to spend days trying to figure out what's going on with this mirror.
I'm sorry. I'm just imagining the salacious sex life of Mary Weatherworth being like, oh, this is some juicy reading.
Also, Weatherworth, man. Like, what the fuck?
I know, and they keep saying it. Oh, the Weatherworth house. I just thought, that does not roll off the tongue, as someone who's tried to say it repeatedly on this podcast can attest to.
I want to say Weatherford, which I think is what you mistakenly said, like, initially almost said before you corrected yourself, or, like, Butterworth.
I mean, Butterworth is the one that comes to mind most distinctively, but just call her Mary Weather, or Mary Worth.
Yes. But it lacks, like, the gravitas of something like Weatherworth, you know?
This is true. It doesn't have that antique-y vibe that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So all this to say, Emmeline is there to clean up the old Weatherworth house because it has been purchased by a widowed woman named Susan Gordon, who is played by Karen Black, and also her teenage daughter, Megan, who is played, as we mentioned, by Rainbow Harvest. And it's a very fun dynamic, at least at the beginning.
Wait, I'm sorry. Really quick, before we move on to these people, I just want to say that I did make a note. So when Emmeline finds the journal, so she finds the journal, which is the diary from 1939. She also finds a book titled The Black Arts. And then she just goes, Like, it's like, this is a curious thing to find in this house. Not like, what the fuck is this?
Well, not even like, oh, right, there was a brutal murder that happened in this house. This explains a lot.
Well, and then she finds another book that's like scientific occultism. And it's like, lady, you hit the jackpot. You've solved the crime.
Very much so. And she doesn't seem to care. She's not all that bothered by it. But she's also like, I'm going to take these home for some late night bedtime reading.
I honestly thought that she was going to be the one to get the power of the mirror. Like, she was going to read the journals and be like, I can do this too. Like, that's what I thought we were going to.
I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know if this was our main character. Yeah. And then to find out, oh no, we're actually just doing this because other characters are going to come in, was a little confusing initially.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, so we are introduced to Susan and Megan, and Susan is later described by Megan as very Beverly Hills, which I thought was a perfect description of how Karen Black is playing this chipper and bright motherfucking woman.
So, honestly, this is a character that, I mean, she's fun to watch, but she's very, it's very much like, your husband died 4 months ago, why? Again, the write-off is, oh, she's just very L.A.
She's very L.A., but you can also tell that she's very sad. Like, she is trying so fucking hard to be happy, and she's not really doing a great job of it.
And I will say that I actually really enjoy her arc in this film. To the point where when, spoiler alert everyone, when she dies at the end of the film, I was genuinely upset.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't. I feel like very few of these deaths are satisfying in the way that we go, oh, yeah, fuck that character. It's very much like, oh, this is just getting more and more sad.
Yeah. I mean, even with the head bitch who, well, okay, well, sorry, we'll talk about it when we get there.
I have thoughts about Charlene.
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, Megan is basically doing Lydia cosplay from Beetlejuice. I mean,
it's apparent from the get-go. She will eventually get a hat.
The hat is magnificent.
It is magnificent, but it is straight up out of Beetlejuice. I was like, okay, I mean, it's shameless, it's egregious, but I'm like, you know what, whatever, fuck it. Like, this is like a low-budget movie from 1990 that came out 2 years after Beetlejuice, so here we go.
Oh, I totally loved it. I don't fault the movie for it at all.
Right.
And in part, I think it's because Rainbow Harvest looks so fucking much like Winona Ryder. Like, there were times where I thought, is this Winona Ryder just doing cosplay?
Honestly, the only time where I was taken out of that illusion, because she has on the side of her head, like, a blonde. Like, I mean, I guess they're roots. I don't, or maybe, like, the dye didn't get that far down her head. I don't know what it is.
Bitch, no, that's a punk aesthetic. She's got, like, half and half.
There you go. Okay. That's the only thing that took me out of it, because all I was missing was a red bridal dress.
Right. I did see somebody else describe this as it's basically Lydia meets Boy George. And I thought, oh, that's also apt.
That's very apt, yeah.
So Megan is not excited to be moving into this new place, but she does like the mirror in her room.
Immediately attracted to it in a very physical way that we will soon find out.
I mean, if you find a mirror that turns you on, stroke it, lick it, fuck it.
What is there's a word for something for people that are like sexually attracted to inanimate objects.
Oh, God, I'm not going to be able to remember, but apparently there was that great Jumbo movie that came out last year.
Oh, yeah, 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 I know, you're right, which you've seen and I haven't, but I think it's also in one of those, like, my...
Oh, God, like my secret addiction or whatever.
Yeah, 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 like that thing.
Oh, dear, yeah, that's a dark path. So Megan heads off to school, and this is a very clean-cut, preppy high school, which basically means she's the only person wearing black.
Yes. I actually like that. Like, the difference between her outfit and everything else, even the production design, is kind of great this entire time.
Oh, yeah.
And we're introduced to this subplot involving the class president, Rinks. I was very invested in this subplot, actually.
Oh my god, when they said that the election had already ended and we didn't get something bigger, yes! I was disappointed.
I was so mad. I was like, I wanted to see this, but I guess they're like, well, you don't want to see Charlene win. No, okay.
This is true. Yeah, so this is a race between ambitious political student Nikki Chandler, played by Kristen Datillo, and she has a dimbulb boyfriend named Ron, who is played by Ricky Paul Golden. And Ron is kind of like the comedic MVP of this movie because he's a full-blown idiot.
So he's actually a horror quiz veteran, Joe. Do you know where we've talked about him before?
So I knew I recognized him, but I couldn't place him.
He is the guy in The Blob who essentially tries to date rape that girl before her body, like, sucks him in.
Okay, yes. Yes. I think I found him cute in The Blob, too.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's cute here, he's cute there. He's less of a shithead here. Well, kind of, honestly.
Kind of.
Yeah, like...
He's not great, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, for being Nikki's boyfriend, which I honestly didn't realize they were dating until about the midway point of the film.
Okay.
But okay. Yeah, he's just like, I didn't like that he was also mean to Megan. Like, I kind of wish it was like a Mean Girl situation, right? Where it's like, oh, we have the Janice and the Damien. No, here it's just Janice and another douchebag.
Right, yeah. I mean, I don't think he's as mean as other people, but
no.
Well, I think he even says at one point, you know, why are you making a pet project of this girl? Like, he feels like Megan is coming between them and he doesn't like it.
There is a time later, though, where he flat out tells her, like, oh, yeah, can you make the mirror make you normal? And it's like, dude.
Yeah, no, that's
go
shitty.
Away.
Yeah. Extra shitty.
Yeah.
So Nikki's political adversary is the mean girl of the school, and that is Charlene Kane, and she is played by Charlie Spaulding.
Nice knockers.
Yeah, I was not expecting to get a ta-ta scene in this movie, but DTV, maybe?
Well, it's like, because all of her political ads emphasize her tits, and that's the line we get from Ron. It's like, I mean, like, the only thing she has that you don't or whatever is, like, nice knockers.
Yeah, and then Nikki's like, stop looking at her tits. What is wrong with you? sadly, Megan makes a bad first impression when she goes into Mr. Anderson, who is played by Stephen Tobolowsky's class.
Who will repeat this role in 2003's Freaky Friday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, like, I had to look up the character's name because I don't know that they really ever say it. But as soon as he showed up, I was like, oh, it's Tobo. He's playing Tobo because he only ever plays Tobo.
100%. The only time I have seen him not play this type of role is in One Day at a Time, the Netflix/pop series.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay.
He plays the boss, the main character, but he gets in a relationship with Rita Moreno.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, that sounds like a nice stretch for him.
Literally, when he showed up, I was like, oh, I fucking hate this guy. And then he's like, oh, he's not playing a total shithead. Okay.
Yeah, because he often plays this sarcastic, sardonic, kind of jerky authority figure.
Someone who clearly was bullied a lot as a child, who is a bully as an adult.
Yeah, okay. I mean, fits with the theme of this movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so Megan trips almost immediately. I do like the use of slow-mo in this film in particularly important moments to Megan. So she has a slow-mo moment where she walks in and everybody's just staring at her and whispering, and then it trips her up literally and she runs out of class, but it endears her to Nikki, who comes and brings her bags, and they start their friendship.
Okay, so I was getting major, obviously we've said Carrie, but like going back to one of our very first episodes on The Rage Carrie 2, I felt like as someone who was pretty like meticulously, oh my words are off today, who was pretty ridiculously bullied a lot in middle school, like I think this is why I enjoyed the first half of this movie so much is because I loved seeing this friendship develop between
the
two.
Oh my god, yes. Yeah.
Their chemistry is great, and it's just, again, it's like, oh, we have this girl who she's the outcast, and these people are mean to her just because she wears black.
Yes.
They were so charismatic and charming that I just wanted to see more of them together.
Absolutely. And even though, like, the film is actually giving us a lot of that in the first half, it makes you realize, once again, how infrequently we get good female friendships, particularly in horror films. So then this comes along, and you think, oh, fuck, yes, give me more of this. I actually like it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Fair point.
Okay, so we need to cut back to the antique shop so that we can touch base with Emmeline. Basically, she's just reading Mary's diary, and we're learning about the fact that there's evil, and she's doing this light reading, and then she catches up with real estate agent Mrs. Perlili, who is played by Anne Hurd.
Perfili.
Perhealy?
Fee, like, it's an F. Like, instead of a Lily, it's a Feely, like Mr. McFeely.
God damn it. I had that right then, and it's wrong on IMDb.
Trust me, I made the same mistake when I was writing my notes. So I was right there with you.
All right. So she connects with real estate agent Miss Perfili, and...
Who's pregnant for no reason.
For no reason, and barely plays a part in this movie, but she does turn up a couple times. Mm-hmm. And this is where we learn that the mirror that was supposed to be delivered to the antique shop is still in Gordon House.
Yep, and she's just kind of like, huh, that's interesting.
I'll come back to that later.
Yeah, I'm gonna take a day, and I'm gonna continue reading these books.
Mm-hmm. I'm just such a slow reader. All right, so Megan comes home from school, and this is where we learn that one of the dogs, so Susan has two new dogs. I got the impression they're kind of like therapy dogs for her or something to fill the void.
They are, because her psychiatrist told her to get the dogs. Told her to move, mm-hmm. and told her to get two dogs.
Yes, and is like telling her to make friends and like start her life again. It's like, I don't know, man, this all seems really fast.
Well, I mean, and I'm not a therapist, admittedly, but I don't think therapists are supposed to tell you what to do. I think they're supposed to guide you, but not say, yeah, you should totally uproot your life and move away.
Yeah. It's kind of fun, too, that it's just a disembodied voice on the phone, so we don't ever meet this person, but I'm going to say that they're the real villain of this movie.
There is a phone call that happens between Karen Black and the psychiatrist, and she's, like, going on about how she can't sleep, blah, 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 and she's like, and I'm hot. And I'm like, what is your psychiatrist going to do about how hot you are?
She wants pills. She wants an ice bath. She wants reassurances that she's still sexy because she's going through menopause.
And the therapist asks how the dogs are doing, and she's like, I don't know, I've only had them for 2 weeks. It's okay.
Bananas, yeah. So one of these dogs is already dead, though, because, of course, it went into the room and...
Ooh, yeah.
Off-screen violence.
Content warning for two dead dogs. We see the corpse of the first one, but thankfully not the second one.
Yeah. I will say I may have given a chuckle at the fact that Susan is so out of touch that she doesn't see anything wrong with prominently displaying the dead dog's body on the kitchen counter.
No, I agree with you. I'm blaming it on the grief because I think she's just like, I don't know what to fucking do.
But, 100%. Yeah.
It's a hilarious visual, and Megan's reaction to it is appropriate.
Yes. Megan is like, what the fuck is this? Why is this up here? So then that night, Megan has a nightmare about the decomposing body of her dead father attacking her. And like, all of this stuff is so good.
Yeah,
I'm totally
really like
on board
too.
With it.
Mm-hmm. The makeup on this guy, like, he basically looks like a melted wax figure, and it's awesome.
It's really good. Yeah. Simple, though. It's simple but effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So the next morning at school, Megan runs into Charlene's hot and seemingly kind boyfriend, Jeff. And the problem is that Jeff, who is played by Tom Bresnahan, he looks quite similar to Ron.
To Ron? Yeah.
Like generic white boy syndrome in this movie.
No, I thought the same thing. I also, for some reason, wrote him down as Ted initially in my notes. And then I
also had Ted.
Okay.
Oh my god.
Okay. No, I think they say Ted. I think they say Ted. At his first thing, at his first appearance, but then it's Jeff for the rest of the movie.
Folks, as we mentioned, there are some wonky things happening with this movie.
Having just edited our episode on The Forsaken, where sometimes we're like, I don't remember what happened, or in The Skulls, where we're like, we stopped paying attention to this movie. This is not one of those cases. We both meticulously watched this movie.
Yeah, but I'm blaming the movie in this part.
Yeah, this is the movie's fault.
So Megan is introduced to Jeff Ted, and she finds him quite hot, which is understandable because Jeff Ted is quite hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she proceeds on. So she and Nikki have kind of a great day where they're getting in trouble in drama class, and then they're hanging out in the art room.
This scene was good, too. I loved this drama class scene.
I just love that they're giggling like little shits and everybody's, hey, we're trying to perform here. Can you shut the fuck up out there?
I think it's Charlene, right?
Oh, is it Charlene on the stage?
I think so. I mean, yeah. Okay. I think so. I think it's Charlene. And then she yells at the teacher. The teacher's been sleeping the whole time. And I was like, this is great. Like, this is so awesome.
Yeah. And then we see that Nikki is actually really great at making objects out of clay. She's done an entire bust of Ron's head. And then she makes fun of how stupid he is.
Okay, the clay thing I thought was going to play a part in some
Me
kind of
too.
Magical... Yes, okay.
Don't introduce clay and then not do something with it.
I don't know! This isn't Ghost. Like, you can't just, like, have a pottery scene and make it, like, iconic. You need to do something with this clay.
Yeah, because, folks, we are not talking about a small sculpture. This thing is larger than his actual head, and yes. It's actually really impressive.
Yeah, it's good!
It will never come back again.
I mean, well, it does later, and it's been messed up, but, like, it doesn't do anything. Like,
no.
It doesn't come alive and kill somebody.
No. Okay, but through all of that, we've been learning a little bit more about Weatherworth and the historical legacy of the house.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, at home, because of the dead dog, Susan has invited Mr. Bill Veazey, played by William Sanderson, to dinner.
Okay. The whole time, because this is before I made my little notes, I was like, who the fuck is this actor? He looks so familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Sheriff Dearborn from True Blood.
Yeah. He's got such a meek, mousy face. He's one of those character actors where he shows up and you just think, oh, okay, I know who you are immediately.
Unfortunately, again, though, like, his inclusion kind of comes to nothing.
Yeah, it's a little bit surprising to the extent that I almost wonder if there was a subplot or something that got dropped, because it really does feel like they're building up to something with him and Susan. And yes, obviously we get the sex scene later on, but that's it for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he just leaves the movie at a certain point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a bit of that in the back half.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this awkward dinner. Megan is not happy that he is there, but she's not being a bitch or a brat about it. She's just not really engaging with anything.
She's just quiet.
Yeah, she's just quiet. And then this is where the flies begin to arrive.
So it's very Amityville Horror.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so we have like a nest of flies building on the corner of the mirror. Oh, also I should point out, I actually love the way that the mirror is shot. It's frequently shot from like below to where mm-hmm. it has this kind of hulking presence. So there's a menace to this mirror that I really like from the get-go.
Oh, yes. And then later on, we'll actually see scenes that are almost shot like from the mirror's point of view. And mm-hmm. those are also great.
Yeah, they're really good. Yeah, it's like a blue tint, but it's kind of out of focus. Or maybe that was just the VHS transfer. I don't know.
Good question.
but yeah, and so then we just get this really, like, lengthy scene of Sheriff Dearborn, like, swatting flies away from his food.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's saying anything.
No one's saying anything. And then at one point, he's just like, all right, I can't do this anymore. So he leaves, but he makes a reference to flashbacks. And I couldn't help but wonder, is that a reference to, like, Vietnam?
So he does say Vietnam.
Oh, does he? Okay, I missed that
part. He's having PTSD flashbacks because he was in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because it's like, okay, he's not sitting here like, oh, this is a dirty ass house with flies. He's mm-hmm. literally like blaming himself for it.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of like, okay, but like, why? Like, why is this important for us to know?
Yeah, it's a bit of an odd character beat. Like, I like that for him because it does give him mm-hmm. just something more that we didn't really know that we needed from him. I took it to be that we're already associating this house with death.
Okay. No, I get that. That makes sense. I mean, maybe it'd be too cruel, but like, if he was, A, had a death scene that mm-hmm. involved something with like a Vietnam flashback, or he thought he was having a flashback, but it was actually something coming to kill him. Like, you know, that would make sense to me.
Right, because even, you know, Megan never discovers that he has been sleeping with her mom, and that would totally make sense, right? Like, she discovers this, she blames him because dad isn't there anymore. Well, like, dad is dead, but, you know, mom is moving too fast, and she's sleeping with you, and then, yeah, we get something Vietnam-related.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe that's in poor taste, I don't know, but it would make the inclusion of this make more sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think really after this, we just get the kind of sex scene between him and the mom, and there's nothing else with him after that.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but already what we're establishing is that there is a bit of a division between mother and daughter, because Megan does not approve of these actions either. So, in gym class the next day, we get further clarity that Megan is being ostracized by everyone except Nikki when she is chosen last for some kind of pool team matchup.
I wrote in my notes, in all caps, why do they make kids pick each other in turns? Like,
it's so bad.
We see it on Drag Race because they're obviously trying to start drama, like, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I never understood why in school... Why do you want to instantly, like, split your kids up and make someone feel left out like that? Because I can tell you right mm-hmm. now, being picked last, while it's a stereotype of, like, you know, of a trope of films like this, it doesn't feel good. It really sucks.
Yeah, and it really does happen because someone literally has to be chosen last. And the reality is that it's going to be the person who isn't popular to the people who are picking the teams.
And this scene is even more egregious because not only is she put on Charlene's team, but then they're like, can she not just go on the other team? We'll take one less player. It's fine. Mm-hmm.
It's so bizarre, too, because of course she's going to be picked last. She's literally the new girl. It would make more sense for this. I mean, this gym teacher is a huge bitch, so... Yeah. I'm not surprised, but at the same time, you would think, oh, there's the new girl. Let's make sure she gets chosen first to make her feel welcome.
That would make more sense. I mean, have you ever, again, I can't think of a specific instance, but I know in my mind that I've been picked last for something like this. Have you ever had an experience like this?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because I played a bunch of sports and it's more casual, right? Like it's more pickup kind of stuff, but it's like, oh, okay, who's going to get picked last? And I was never good at those kinds of sports, so I wasn't picked first.
Oh, okay. I guess I just would think that you would be. Maybe that's why you got into sports later, is because you're trying to, like, redo, like, your childhood.
Entirely possible. I mean, I played soccer as a kid, but that's not a sport where you get picked, so it was like you just end up on a team.
What sports were you forced to play as a kid?
So, I played baseball, and that was bad. Oh, I also got beamed, so that was not good. I had, like, I don't want to say PTSD, because that's overselling beamed? It, but I, yeah, like, if you get hit by the ball.
Oh, like, purposefully?
Well, someone was pitching, and the ball hit me.
Oh, I guess I'm thinking, like, when you swing the bat, it might be, like, a girly swing, and so people, like, sorry, not for you specifically, but, like, in general for us queer folk, because that was definitely my issue when I played baseball.
Didn't have a good swing?
Didn't have a good swing. Yeah, I did baseball. I did basketball once, and I did soccer. I hated soccer, though, because I hated the socks.
Okay. Not a fan of the thigh highs, huh?
Yeah, it's the thigh highs. You have to wear, like, the shin guards, and I will say that peeling those things off is orgasmic.
A wet schbrook.
Oh, it's so gross. I really, really hated sports. I have a PTSD of my parents yelling, hustle! Hustle! Like, as you're running down the field. Ugh, I hate that.
Yeah, and just in case anyone is working in mental health and they want to challenge us, we recognize that we're saying PTSD very liberally and very flippantly. It's more just, it can be upsetting to remember not great memories from the past.
Well, again, don't want to say trauma. It's not really trauma because it's not like, well...
It's just bad memories.
It's, yeah, bad memories of this shit. But I did interrupt you, so if you wanted to continue your story, you can continue your story.
I mean, we'll get back to the movie, because really this is about Megan and how she feels.
Well, except we're about to cut back to the movie that Emmeline's in.
Yes, this is true. Some of these early scenes do suffer from some weird editing decisions, because it's almost like, oh, right, we got to get Emmeline in here somewhere. So there is this bit about how we learn that black cloth can be used to block the demon's power.
Yes, which...
Okay.
Okay. I will accept this fact. Why... She doesn't just put the thing on the mirror later. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I guess she gets stabbed, but whatever.
She was seduced by its power, Trace. She was going to stroke it.
It just says, mirrors are a gateway to the other side, allowing demons to enter our world. The demons will seduce people into using its power and then fall prey to the demon's evil bidding. Mm-hmm. And a black cloth was used to void the creature's power, which I hope y'all aren't expecting to see much of a creature in this movie.
Yeah, we get a couple glimpses, and that's about it.
And questions will arise later.
Indeed, yeah. All right, so we cut back to what's happening at school, and we've got Nikki and Charlene butting heads in the cafeteria about their respective electoral campaigns. It's all fun stuff.
Yeah.
And then we shift into slow motion as Megan and Nikki and Ron walk to their seats. And Megan again hears people laughing at her. And this is where, at home, the mirror begins to bleed. And at school, Charlene starts to get a really fucking epic nosebleed.
It's rivaled only by the one in Drag Me to Hell, but it is great. I also think the visual of the blood pouring down this mirror is kind of awesome.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we're using some pretty obvious reversal, like we're just running the film backwards. But it is also great when Susan then approaches the door because the dog is barking at the mirror, and mm-hmm. we just see the blood retracting back up. And yep. yes, I'm going to make the obvious Final Destination water back into the toilet reference.
Well, but that's the thing, that the mirror constantly covers up its tracks. Like, it makes oh, yeah. bodies just disappear.
I fucking love it.
It's
love
kind of great. It. Like, the powers of this mirror are basically everything.
Oh, yeah.
If you can imagine it, this mirror can do it. Mm-hmm. And normally I'd be like, I'd like these powers defined a little bit more. I don't care here. I don't care.
No, give me sentient mirror who can do fucking everything. I'm really happy with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, this mirror sprouts some legs and arms. Well, it does kind of sprout arms at one point.
This is true.
Have it walk around the house. I am there for it.
Oh my god. A walking mirror? That sounds terrifying.
So good.
Okay, so we hop over to Nikki's house where we're just kind of hanging out, and this is where Megan starts to wonder if she and or witchcraft is responsible for Charlene's nosebleed. This is when Ron pieces out. He is not interested in the conversation, so he just yeah. leaves.
I said the line earlier, but yeah, because basically, Nikki and Ron still don't believe her about mm-hmm. the mirror. And yeah. Megan is pretty much like, no, I'm pretty sure I made that happen. And his yeah. line to her is, yeah, why don't you try to make something happen right now? Like, make yourself a normal person. And I'm just so mean.
Yeah, Dick, you don't have to do that. I mean, there's a certain amount of questioning that organically happens when you're in high school because you're just right. trying to figure shit out anyway. But like, she's clearly upset about it. You don't need to be a dick.
Yeah, but again, he never thought she was okay to begin with. Like, it's not like no. he's turning on her. He's just, like, always thinks she's weird.
Yeah, he is only talking to her because Nikki is talking to her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The next day at school, Charlene and her lackey Kim, who is played by Dorit Saar, they have decided that the next level of intimidation is that they're going to dress up in black just like Megan.
So, did you catch the Carrie reference here?
No, I did not.
So in the car when they pull up, first Jeff Ted is like, y'all, this is really mean, blah, blah, blah. And Charlene is doing her whole, it's just a joke, which is what bullies love yes. to do. Mm-hmm. But she goes, it's not like we're going to coat her in pig's blood or anything.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah.
Nice, okay.
So the movie very much knows what it's doing.
Oh, yes. I get the sense that this film knows exactly what it is referencing.
Mm-hmm. And it does play like that. Comparisons don't need to be made because we've already made them.
Right, okay. So Megan comes in and she just kind of ignores this, but she's obviously, you know, a little upset by it.
Yeah, but I didn't think, honestly, like in terms of pranks, I was kind of like, oh, that's it? Okay, like if someone wants to dress up like me, by all means, like do it.
Yeah, it's just a little bit mean, and it does get a line out of Tobo because he says, yeah. oh, I hope this isn't the start of something.
Yeah, I feel like teachers, I mean, again, maybe I'm totally wrong, but I feel like teachers can't really get away with shit like that nowadays.
No.
I never had a teacher like this. I never had a teacher that, like, singled anyone out, really, to my knowledge, for things like that.
I did. I had one who was admittedly a little close to retirement age, but I vividly remember a faculty member in high school. We had a faculty member who told us that we wouldn't amount to anything except working in fast food.
Oh, I had that in college. I had a professor tell us that we can all go sign up for the war and get killed because we didn't do our reading the night before.
Jesus.
Okay. But that's college. We're adults by that point.
I mean, admittedly, but that also seems a little bit like, well, if you want to fail, it's your decision. You're paying for it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Anyway, so Tobo decides to take his intimidation to the next level because he checks her test and he's unhappy. So he's like, it's some kind of line about like, oh, your problem is that you don't have any solution.
Yeah, was she not doing the test?
I thought that she had just finished it, but maybe she just hadn't completed it at all.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought maybe she just wasn't doing it, but the film doesn't really
it's not clear.
Tell us.
No. All this to say, it doesn't make her happy because he then begins to choke. We quickly learn that he is asthmatic, and then he collapses on his desk and gets wheeled away.
And wheeled out of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, never to be seen again. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tobo. That's a wrap on Tobo.
Yep.
So at home, Susan is making her best effort to get a little zhuzhed up. She's got a lime green miniskirt. She's looking hot.
Mm-hmm.
I do also like the fact that Susan wears different wigs throughout the film because
yes,
it's just fun.
Again, Karen Black's face is fairly distinct, but it's this mm-hmm. long-haired wig where I was like, okay, this looks like Karen Black.
Yes.
What she's introduced in, I was very much like, oh, this is a different look for her, but that's supposed to be her real hair, right? Or is that still a wig?
I kind of thought that they were all wigs.
Maybe that's true. You might be right.
Yeah, because when she's introduced, and I'm like already losing names, so you're going to have to help me. She looks like Adam's Family Values.
Debbie Jelinski. Oh my God. I thought the same fucking thing. Like, even the way... Even the way she, like, behaves, her mannerisms, like, it's very Joe Cusack and Adam's Family Values.
Yes, because I actually thought, oh, maybe she's going to be the villain, and she's going to be telling Megan, no, you can't do anything, like, she's an authoritarian mother. But it's not, she's just dressed like her.
So I love having this kind of experience with you, because, I mean, I've said, like, sometimes I'll watch the movie along with the Wikipedia plot to make sure I'm, like, catching everything.
Mm-hmm.
I intentionally did not do that with this movie, and I only looked at the basic plot, like the one sentence log line. So I literally had no idea where this movie was going.
Yeah, and honestly, I would kind of advise people that that's the best way to do it, because there's a bunch of moments in here where you just go, okay, movie, I didn't think you were going to go there.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Again, 3-star movie for me, but there's plenty of surprises in store.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, this is a hearty recommendation, even though I don't think it's entirely successful.
Speaking of surprises, we're getting to our piece de resistance of the film.
Oh my God, it's so good. Yeah, so Megan doesn't approve of this outfit, and she runs upstairs, and this is again where the mirror begins dripping blood, but Megan is actually here to see it, and this is when she seems to get a little sexually excited, because she definitely begins licking and gently humping.
Okay, so yes. The licking at first, I was like, oh my God. We're licking this rando blood on this evil mirror.
Yes.
So that was my first jaw drop. Mm-hmm. Then she starts kissing the mirror.
Yep.
Second jaw drop. And then a demon hand comes out between her thighs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. I don't even know. This is, I mean, I guess it's supposed to be her sexual awakening of sorts. So you were preparing it with, like, not puberty, because she's clearly already gone through puberty, but...
But it kind of is, right? Like, I mean, this is an almost entirely female creative team with an almost entirely female cast.
Mm-hmm.
And we're dealing with issues of, like, sexual liberation, female rage, female oppression. This, to me, was very much a sexual coming-of-age moment where she is fucking this mirror, she's accepting this demon into her, and as a result, she is kind of claiming her power, like her sexual agency, via demonic possession.
Well, and then the blood gets kind of more gushy. Really, it's the climax of this sex scene, because we get more blood. I mean, I have never seen anything like this in a film before, and I am here for it.
Oh, I'm so here for it. And just because I mentioned her off the top, I am going to reference a little bit from Kate Hagen's review. Mm-hmm. So she talks specifically about this scene. She says, the mirror is indicative of Megan's initial inability to embrace her personal style and the way she presents herself to the world. But once she's sexually communed with the incubus in the mirror, she's finally able to love her reflection in the endless void of mirror space. Most women struggle to love themselves from the beginning.
And see, no, I 100% buy into that. Like, that is what's happening here. It just kind of, after this, it's like, all right, well, now she's just going to be an evil person who just kills people. She becomes the serial killer of the film.
Yes, yeah. She starts to get her revenge, but as a result, Megan, as we know her, is kind of just gone. And that's disappointing because the Megan that we were getting, like, I wanted to see that character find her strength. And instead, this just feels like, oh, okay, you know, we've got the actress here and she's going through the motions, but the character is gone.
There is a moment later, a line of dialogue from Megan that we'll get later that honestly rubbed me the wrong, not because I think it's inappropriate, but because I just hated what it meant for this character. That it really rubbed me the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I guess the sex scene is now done because she is interrupted by Emmeline.
Who finally shows up.
Yeah, she's like, hey, I'm here for my fucking mirror. And Megan's like, bye, get out of here.
I'm not getting it to you. I like the mirror, I'm keeping it.
Yeah. Never seen so many people fighting about a mirror in my life.
Emily's like, well, what come to my shop? I have plenty of mirrors you can like. No, I like this one.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine somebody going to bat like, no, this is my mirror. I have to have this mirror. I will not part with this mirror.
It's silly in concept. It's played pretty seriously here, which I mean.
Oh, for sure.
But like, it's, yeah, it's pretty funny to talk about.
And interestingly enough, we noticed the change in Megan immediately because she's quite rude to Emmeline. She's slamming the door in this woman's face.
And she's quote unquote prettified now.
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, let's get to that because we've got a cut to Charlene's party, which sidebar appears to be taking place at the school. I don't think it's meant to be the school, but
that's what I thought too, though.
Looks like it.
And this is when I realized that Nikki and Rom were dating, because when they went into the closet to make out, I was like, oh. I guess they're together.
Oh, that's funny. Okay. Yeah, I do love that the introduction to this party is literally Charlene's what appears to be an actual presidential election campaign video. It is so ludicrous. I fucking loved it.
Oh, I mean, I don't think Charlene is really that memorable as a mean girl because she doesn't
really do much.
Yeah, like she does a lot of shitty things, but there's nothing on par with what Chris Harkinson does, with mm-hmm. what Regina George does. Like, no. But I still think she's an interesting character. But yeah, this video was like peak Charlene, and I loved it.
Oh, it's so good. This was kind of queer icon status for Charlene, where you're just like, oh, I want to see more of this bad boss. She's so much.
It reminds me of Elle Woods' Harvard Law video.
Yes. Only really diluted.
No, absolutely, for sure. But like, I wanted to be like, oh, I object. I am comfortable using legal jargon in everyday life.
My tits will save this school.
that's really what, yes, yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay, so Megan arrives and she, I mean, I don't want to say that she's looking hot because I actually always think that Megan looked good. It's just she's classically attractive now.
She's white as a ghost, but yeah, like that's what I said. I have it in quotes, but yeah, it's like she's sexified.
Yeah, exactly. And she immediately catches Jeff, aka Ted. She catches his eye and he asks her to dance. And it's actually kind of a nice moment where they connect and he wants to talk and she just says, can we please just dance? And she puts her head on his shoulder and mm-hmm. you're like, oh, this is sweet.
It's reminiscent of the first scene between her and Nikki. Like, I like watching this.
Yeah, to the point where I was pretty sure it was a setup and it is revealed to be a setup. Mm-hmm. But it's believable enough that you think Jeff Ted may actually like her.
Well, and he does empathize with her. Like, he constantly tells Charlene, like, why are you doing this? Like, what's your fixation on her? But he also doesn't do anything to stop any of it. So that's the issue there.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, so when Megan finds out, she runs off and she's tearful. And then we see Charlene and Jeff Ted making out in the car, and he is not into it. And as she goes to give him head, he's like, get the fuck out, and they break up.
This is, again, well, Carrie comparison, but it's just like the scene in Carrie when Chris gives Billy head to make him help her with the pig's blood thing, which is always something I laugh at because she's going, Billy, 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 while she's giving him head, and it makes me laugh so hard.
You gotta, you know, multitask. Talk around that dick, ladies. Oh my god. This is where we get canceled.
No, it's fine. We've given blowjobs before.
This is unabashedly true. Yes. So Charlene and Jeff Ted are officially broken up and he immediately goes to Megan's and they begin making out. She's a bit too aggressive for him. He becomes confused. Like, he doesn't even seem to understand what's happening.
Because, hey, so I think it's implied that Megan's will, like, the mirror made him come there. The mirror him want. Yeah, exactly.
100%. Yeah, yeah. It's just interesting to watch him try to grapple with it. Like, he both seems to know what's happening, but also not. So then, of course, then he says, you know what? I think I need to leave. I need to figure out what the fuck is happening. She gets upset and she more or less commands the mirror to first murder him and then get rid of the body.
Question for you.
Mm-hmm.
How does he die?
I don't know. He gets touched, by the mirror hands and it turns him bloody and then he dies.
That's, yes. It's almost like it's bashing his head into the mirror, but like, yeah, it's edited really weird, but we keep seeing the hands shake his head, which gets, yeah, progressively more and more bloody. And then, yeah, that's it.
I don't think we had a stunt coordinator or maybe the budget or the time to do something more than just cover the actor in blood.
Well, and here, maybe it's a bigger budget, but like, why not take the hands of the nails of this creature and just like push them into both sides of his head? You know, like, give me something. Give me a kill. This isn't a kill. This is just something that's bloody.
Yeah. I'm thinking of some of the other scenes and I'm wondering if they're saving the pyrotechnics per se for later deaths.
It's possible, but I mean, the most makeup heavy bit is the Charlene stuff.
And Susan's hand.
But see, though, we don't see the hand. We see, like, I mean, we see, like, a quick cut of her hand where it's covered in blood, but there's no mangled, like, prop hand there. We do see a lot of blood spraying out of the sink, but there's no, like, real prosthetics involved.
Right, okay.
And we do get those with Charlene on her body, but yeah, it's a lot of it's masked by the steam. That's why it's steam.
This is true. I mean, I think this is getting creative with what limited budget you have. Like,
yeah.
I will say Jeff Ted's death is the only one where I do have uncertainty. Like, I don't really know what happened.
Yeah,
I'm just
that's
like,
correct.
Oh, okay, he's dead. Got it.
Yep. That's all it is.
Yeah, so this is the moment where Susan tries to connect with Megan because she heard screaming and Megan just turns her out. And then Susan goes back to bed and this is where we see that Bill is in there with her.
And we also have Megan talk to the mirror and goes, make him go away. And Jeff Ted's body just disappears.
It's amazing. In the blink of an eye.
No, yeah, but we actually get to see it. It's like, oh, we cut away and we go back and he's not there. We see him fade away, which is actually kind of cool.
Yeah, I liked it. All right, so at school the next day, Megan vows to help Nikki, even though Charlene has already won the election. So folks, the election has been won. It happened off screen.
That's cheating the audience. That's what that's called.
I needed a Charlene victory boast scene.
Oh my god, right? To like just really nail in how much of a cunt she is. Like, just like, give it.
We're bleeding into her big death scene, which again, I actually think is a mistake. I don't think it should be happening here, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Okay, so it's just every time in my notes. Back at the house, Emmeline is doing something.
Every time I have an Emmeline bullet in my notes, I bolded it to be like, okay, like, let's separate these out. And this is like a short film that we have with Emmeline doing her own thing.
100%. Yeah, it's like this could be taken out. It could be its own standalone short. Just, you know, Emmeline does. Emmeline reads. Emmeline goes to the house asking for a mirror. Emmeline gets stabbed through the hand and then runs away and leaves the second dog to get killed.
Oh, she hears that dog die and still books it. Like,
She knows what's up.
Yeah, so Emmeline, she walks in with the black cloth. She touches the mirror, which then pierces her hands. She drops the cloth and runs away.
Yeah, she nearly did it. She just needed to not actually put her hands on the mirror.
And that's where, if we're going into, like, Oculus territory here, like, I do think that movie does a better job of showing the mirror's influence on people. This one, I was very unclear. I was like, wait, what? Like, she looks a little hypnotized, but I'm still not clear what's happening here.
Yeah, I think default, just assume people are being hypnotized.
Yeah. They look at it, boom, done.
Exactly. You got one split second chance, and then you're in trouble.
Bitch should have walked in with a blindfold.
Walk in backwards, using a Medusa mirror.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my God.
So back at school, and Trace, I have to tell you, as a person who has played water polo, I died watching this scene. This is not water polo.
Okay. I didn't know what this, it's like beach volleyball, like water volleyball.
No, this is supposed to be water polo.
I don't think I know what water polo is.
Picture soccer in the water. But, like, they're breaking every rule. You're not allowed to touch the ball with both hands. You're not allowed to put your feet on the bottom of the pool. You have to swim the whole time.
What? That sounds impossible.
That's why it's a really, really hard sport.
Okay. No, because there's literally a close-up on these two girls' legs, and she's constantly, like, jumping on the thing. And I was like, oh, why are we just watching this girl, like, just jump a lot from beneath the water?
To the point where it almost feels like male titillation. Like, we know that this was written and directed by women, and yet there's so many underwater leg shots that I thought, who is the audience for this film?
Well, and we're going into the one scene of nudity, which, okay, so Charlene and Nikki get into a fight. Charlene gets into the shower and everything starts steaming and she gets burned alive. But
yes,
at first I was like, okay, so we're not getting nudity because we have her undressing. We don't get the nudity there. We go to the shower. We get a butt shot. Okay. But then all of the shots of her breasts are like filmed a certain way to where we don't see the breasts. It's like side boob or just above the nipple. We don't see it. And then when like the steam starts coming, that's when we get full on nipple shots. And I was like, that's weird. Like, why did we save this? I mean, not that I wanted to see her boobs earlier, but I'm just like, well, if you're going to show them, why are you going out of your way to hide them in earlier shots?
It's almost like a tease, isn't it? You know, oh, you're only going to get tits when you get the steam.
Oh, maybe so. Maybe they told the actress, the steam's going to hide it. Don't worry.
Oh, right. Ugh, that's uncomfortable.
I'm sure that wasn't the case, but...
No, but it's strangely tasteful, even though I do agree with you that I think you could have actually shot this without ever showing her tits.
Yeah, I mean, it's a it's reminiscent to me, too, of the gym teacher death in Nightmare on Elm Street 2. But... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think this is the most impressive death scene from an effects standpoint, too, because we at least do get the makeup of, like, her skin that's melting off.
Yeah, it does look good. I found it goes on a little too long.
Yeah.
I know what's happening, and I don't need the repeated cuts back to Megan in the pool, clearly not playing water polo anymore, and no one giving a shit.
Yeah, she's focusing on carrying the shower room.
Exactly. Like, hey, Megan. Oh, she just got beamed in the head. Oh, she didn't notice. Weird.
Yes.
I will also say I fucking love the moment where they discover this horribly charred body of their friend and schoolmate, and this gym teacher just goes, yes! Everybody go get dressed.
I wrote this too. I was like, this is the equivalent of the, black arts. Like, she's just like, there's a corpse in this room. Gotta do something about it, I guess.
You know what? People just die in this town all the time. I can't be bothered by it. I've got another class to get to.
It was to the point where I was like, maybe she didn't die. Maybe she's just gonna be really injured.
Well, okay. I thought that Tobo had died, and then they wheel him out. So I was also maybe waiting to see, oh, okay, she's just been really badly burned. But no, she's dead.
Yeah, she is absolutely dead.
Which is why Nikki then gets upset with Megan literally moments later when Megan's like, hey, so now you're the president.
Yeah, aren't you happy? You're welcome.
Yeah, Nikki doesn't care for that.
This is when we start the kind of like best friends turning against each other. And this is when Megan really is like out of the movie for me. Because, okay, so we get this line. So she's in the bathroom together and, you know, Kim's hiding in the stall, but we have Megan confront Nikki, and then she basically uses her powers to, like, cause her abdominal pain. And she's like, look, see, I can control it. I can stop it.
But, like, she's hurting her friend. It's so mean.
And then she goes, or I can start it.
Yeah.
And that one line where it's like, okay, so now you're gonna fucking hurt your friend to keep her your friend. That was when it went, like, because, okay, and we're going with Carrie. Carrie at least stays sympathetic. Yeah, she's a total mass murderer, but, like, she's kind of, like, gone through a fugue state, blah, 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 but she's still a sympathetic character.
Yeah.
This, to me, is when Megan stops being sympathetic.
Agreed. And I do think a big part of this is that no one bullies Megan ever again. Like, we just see her acting out against, yes, the people who have bullied her before, but also people that she has no relationship with. So she immediately goes from has these burgeoning powers. Oh, she's misusing them. You know, she lashes out at Charlene, which is totally understandable. But then from here on out, it's like, oh, okay, you're just cold-blooded now.
Well, and again, the whole thing is supposed to be, okay, well, the mirror is, you know, controlling her now, the demon of the mirror. But unfortunately for me, what I'm getting is, oh, okay, this is another scenario of a victim using their victimness to excuse really shitty behavior.
Yeah, and I can't remember, what episode was it where you talked about that in depth? I feel like it was one of the Patreon episodes, right?
Oh, I have no idea. Okay. I have no clue what you're talking about.
Well, there goes that Patreon.
I know, where can we plug that? Y'all, you know what? Go subscribe to the Patreon and listen to everything and let us know where that is.
Yes, but you are on the record as having said you don't like it when people's victimhood gets used as an excuse for turning them into villains.
I mean, it could be argued that her even killing the bully girl is an example of that. Because, yeah, like,
I mean, it would have been nice to have seen a little bit more malice from Charlene, but at the same time, there's something satisfying about watching Megan get that particular piece of revenge.
No, I do get that. But again, it's like, okay, well, yeah, she's a bully, but does she need to get murdered for it, you know?
Right.
Which, I'd argue, well, we're watching a horror movie, so yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. Just want her to, like, lose a couple strips of hair, a la Christine Taylor?
Yeah, right? That's not enough.
My hair!
Oh my god, right? Oh my god, maybe The Craft did see this movie, and that's why they did the pool stuff in that movie.
Oh, honestly, folks who like The Craft, I want to know, have you seen this movie? Do you also like this movie? Because they feel like companion pieces.
I like this more than The Craft. Oh, actually, is it The Craft we were talking about? No, that wasn't it. But although I do hate what happens to those girls.
True, yeah.
Anyway, so sorry, yeah. Nikki storms out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this was a piece where the film actually did surprise me, because I definitely thought that we were going to get Kim rising to be new head bitch, because she's hearing Megan confess, and you think, oh, she's going to use this, she's going to turn everybody against Megan, it's going to be bad. Megan just fucking rips out her tongue, and she is dead on the floor of this bathroom. We don't see it. We see the aftermath, but...
I was going to say, I was like, okay, well, she's dead. I think she slit her throat, but I did love the way that she basically, Nikki runs out, and Megan just goes, Kim, and, like, kicks mm-hmm. open the stall door.
Maybe she was there all along.
We need to have a chat.
She's fucking scary at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, it's just like, yeah, whatever, but...
Mm-hmm.
Now we're really in the Nikki movie. That's where the rest of this movie is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Nikki grabs Ron's car. She goes looking for answers. She eventually winds up connecting with Emmeline. And this is where we figure out, okay, we need to stop this mirror. It's not really Megan anymore. So
okay. I want just clarification really quick, though. So mm-hmm. Emmeline tells her that, so in the beginning, the opening twin sister scene.
Right.
Elizabeth is the one who got killed. And so she goes, Elizabeth called forth the demon and the mirror controlled her. So her sister Mary killed her to appease mm-hmm. the mirror. So the one who was doing the murdering wasn't the one under the mirror's power in the beginning of the movie.
She was like the Nikki.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Because as we'll find out soon, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Emmeline says, okay, here's this dagger that the Weatherbirth sisters used that I apparently just have in my antique shop. And yep. She says, I'll meet you, but I got to do something first. So she goes to call the priest, and this is where astral projection starts to come into play. Megan apparently has the power to shatter a mirror in Emmeline's room, and she dies when the shattered glass impales her.
So what would make sense here is if it's like Snow White, like the mirror in Megan's room shows her what the mirror in Emmeline's room is seeing. Like, again, it's a portal to other worlds. It's a portal to other mirrors. That would make sense. Like, the mirror, the demon in the mirror can see whatever any mirror is seeing. So he's like, hey, look, this bitch is trying to stop you. That would make sense. The way we have it, though, it's just like, she just knows.
Mm-hmm. She just knows everything that's happening at every point.
Yeah.
Also, in this hypothetical scenario, is Megan now being played by Julia Roberts?
Yes. Oh my god, we haven't made a mirror joke yet. Everyone, in case you haven't learned, we are not talking about Tarsem Singh's Mirror with Julia Roberts.
Oh my god, can you imagine if people have gotten, what, fully an hour and like 10 minutes into this episode, and they're just going, where is Julia Roberts in this description?
Or if they're watching the Mirror with Julia Roberts, and they're like, where's the horror?
Oh god.
Because I just rewatched that Snow White, A Tale of Terror with Sigourney Weaver recently, and I was getting a lot of callbacks to that as well.
Yes, I did see a bunch of people making sort of Snow White references with this, which I think, again, mm-hmm. is part of course when you have
talk about mirrors. Yeah. Yeah.
We're starved for mirror horror content, folks. We need more mirror horror.
Honestly, I'm here for it.
I would also be here for it, yeah.
Give me any fun inanimate object and, like, make it evil. Like, just do it. I don't care.
For sure, yeah. Give me Oculus 2 is what we're saying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so Emmeline is now dead. Goodbye.
Her 3 days of filming. Goodbye, Yvonne DiCarlo. Mm-hmm. You were missed.
Yep, that's a wrap on Yvonne DiCarlo. Thanks for coming by. And so we cut to Ron enthusiastically making a mayo sandwich.
This scene goes on for so long. They knew what they were doing, because we then get the cut to the sandwich, which looks like absolute horseshit.
Oh, it looks like it looks like a teenage boy made it, so it's messy and all over the place.
It's just ingredients splayed out that he didn't compile the sandwich. He just put the ingredients out and said, that's a sandwich.
Do you think he was just going to put it on the counter and then like climb onto the counter and eat his way across and then call it a sandwich?
I thought you were going to say climb on the counter and shit on it.
No, I was not headed in that direction. Wait, are you thinking of other reflective surfaces and what people do with them?
I guess. I don't know. Wait, what are you trying to reference? What are you making a joke about?
Shitting on glass countertops and stuff.
Do people do that?
It's a kink.
Oh, okay. I mean, no, I'm not going to kink.
You lie under the glass coffee table and then people shit so that you can see the poop hit the glass.
Oh, okay. Not going to lie. I know that scat play is a thing. Did not know the glass thing. That's actually kind of interesting. I mean, not that I want to do it, but it's actually kind of interesting. Like, oh, okay. Like, it's like a barrier. Like, you're safe from the poop. You just get to see it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know how to come back from that now.
Yeah, I'm just so Ron
is making a sandwich. Yes.
Nikki's in his bathroom drowning.
Yeah. Okay. So. I know that we don't love this back half of the movie as much. I fucking love this part, though.
Okay.
I'm hoping you're going to say the same. No, you're going to say
Oh, shit. I don't dislike it. I'm just kind of like...
What?
Well, I like it fine. I like it fine. So I thought it was bad editing. I guess Nikki made her way there and, like, the mirror somehow got her in the tub and drowned her. Like, I wasn't aware we were in a doppelganger situation yet.
Well, it's because it's a power we've never seen before, so it doesn't make sense initially until you see Nikki come through the front door and you realize, wait, why do we have two Nikkis all of a sudden?
Well, I did realize it before that, because she starts aggressively kissing him in the water before Nikki walks in.
And he's a teenage boy, so he's a fucking idiot, and he just goes along with it. I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, Ron, she is actively drowning you, and you think you're going to get laid. Yeah.
So if you have not seen this movie, listeners, he walks into the bathroom. Nikki's body is in there. He thinks that she's drowning, and he pulls her out. He gives her mouth to mouth. She coughs once, and no water comes out.
No.
And she's like, I'm okay, really? And then she, like, kisses him as a thank you, but then she pushes him back in the tub and starts making out with him.
Like, really aggressively, though.
Yeah, really aggressively, and then starts pushing his head underwater and kissing him underwater. And while that's happening, that's when we see Nikki, like the real Nikki. And then we're like, oh, this is an evil mirror doppelganger going on up here.
Yeah, and then she bites off his lip and then drowns him. And then she kind of hides in the corner as real Nikki comes in, sees his drowned bloody body, and then she turns around and sees herself cowering in the corner and then laughing, and then she disappears.
I did like that. I thought that was actually really, really creepy. if we're talking video store fodder here, like, I can see a child renting this and, like, this is terrifying.
Oh my god, this is kinder trauma for sure. Yeah.
I mean, a child would be shocked by the mirror fucking scene too, but
maybe.
But yeah.
I do also love that Nikki immediately knows what's up, because she walks out of the bathroom, turns, sees the phone, calls Megan, and Megan just like, hey, you're my best friend, why don't you come over?
Okay, I do love this line from Megan though, where she's like, so the phone call is basically over, and Megan goes, oh, and Nikki, that silly old woman from the antique store, she won't be joining us. I did like that.
We've already said she's out of the movie. That is a wrap on her. Okay, so it is important to note that Susan has been in this movie a couple of times. We sort of alighted over a couple of her appearances, but she has acknowledged that she hasn't been a great mom to Megan.
I love that the movie does this. Yes. I love that we get this moment, which, I mean, granted, it's only so we can feel bad for her when she dies, but...
Very true.
It works, though. Like, the scene when she... Because I don't know if she's still with Sheriff Dearborn or whatever, but, like, she basically says, hey, let's have a dinner with just us. Like, yeah. I want to start mending this relationship. And it's like, ugh, good for you, Karen Black.
Yeah, for sure. It's a really nice, genuine moment. So it has come time now for Megan to join Susan at this fancy, nice dinner for just the two of them. And Megan basically shits on that idea. So Susan goes downstairs and she tosses the nice meal into the carburetor. And Megan has a change of heart, but it's too late because the mirror locks her in her room. And they're so connected that Megan immediately knows what's happening. And she knows that this fucking mirror is going to kill her mother using the carburetor.
What I love, though, so we get a fake out, which is a trope with a carburetor that happens in way too many movies. And I was like, okay, I was relieved, because I will say that a carburetor scene is a really cheap way to like get you on your on the edge of your seat, because it works, I've seen it so many times and I'm like, okay, I don't need to see it again, because I'm nervous the entire time watching it, but like, and that's the point, but like, it's old hat now. I love that this movie gives us a fake out.
Yeah.
And then like she pulls the thing out and it's like, oh, all is good. But then she drops something else in there.
Yeah. Oh, you thought she was safe? No, we're going back for seconds.
Ugh. And it's I mean, it's blood just spraying out of this carburetor. Like, yeah. It is a lot.
We get it in slow-mo, so it's extra goopy. And I think it's also important to note that the mirror is doing something interesting at this point, too. So we have black liquid that's spraying out of it, and it actually shatters. And going back to Kate Hagen's reading of this, she reads that as Megan trying to fight back against the mirror and feeling really bad about the fact that she didn't want to kill her mom. The mirror did. So the black liquid is like her trying to fight back.
So that so I wrote blood here, but it is black, but I just assumed it was just bad fake blood.
Oh, okay.
I wrote those. Oh, this is The Shining. Like, this is the elevator in The Shining.
Yeah, because it's a lot of blood.
Oh, yeah. It's a great shot. Again, we're kind of angled. We're down, angled up towards the mirror as we're seeing this. And it's really, really cool.
Yeah. Honestly, everything to do with the mirror is shot really well. The mirror is a figure of menace and it doesn't do fucking anything. It's great.
Yeah. So then, yeah, Nikki comes in and you know, we have our windy climax.
Yeah, so she tries to break the mirror. That does not work. And then she tries to take Megan out of the house, but they cannot open any of the doors. Yeah, we basically got a hurricane-level winds going through this house.
I did write, though, when Nikki's trying to climb up the stairs, because, you know, it's just, like, fans blowing on him. I was like, good for this actress. It really looks like it's hard for her to climb up this staircase.
Oh, yeah. You can just tell Sargenti's, like, point the fan directly at her. Blow her down.
Kristen DiTillo, please look like you're climbing really up a steep hill and just grab onto the banister. Just grab onto it.
She's holding on for dear life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so at this point they've been separated, which is why Nikki goes back upstairs. And when she comes into the room, Trace, she discovers that Megan has died by suicide.
Yeah, okay, so I didn't get that. I thought that maybe the mirror killed her, I don't know, but that makes more sense. Because she kills herself to appease the mirror, right?
Well, to stop the possession, because the mirror needs someone who has made a wish to possess. So by killing herself, she has basically done what the sisters did at the beginning. She has ended the possession, so the mirror no longer has power.
Right. We do also have the mirror doing some Evil Dead 2, like, or Evil Dead join us, but it's just going, Megan, Megan.
Oh, yeah, this mirror's been talking to people the whole time. We just haven't been referencing it. It's very vocal.
So, yeah, that's a thing that happens. But then Nikki just looks at the mirror and goes, revert everything back to the way it was. And I was like, okay, we're doing one of those. Like, that's...
Yeah, did you think that we were just going to walk it all back?
Yes, that is exactly what I thought. The movie has way more confusing things in mind for us, though.
Oh my god, yes. So what happens is we transport Nikki and Megan back into the Weatherworth sisters from the opening scene of the film. At this point, Megan is already dead, so it's like post-stabbing from the opening scene. But yeah, basically... Nikki starts to freak out, and this is when the demon in the mirror begins to creep out.
I don't know what this is. So yeah, its face comes out. It's a long...
It goes on for a while, yeah.
Where it's just roaring and roaring and roaring, and Nikki's looking at it, and it sticks its head out, roars some more.
Yeah. It tortoises, and then it goes back in. What do you want? You want more?
Like, okay, so... What? I know what happens to the demon. Like, it sticks his head out, says hi, goes back in, whatever.
Yeah.
What is, like, what happens? What is this?
I have so many questions.
Wikipedia says that she's stuck in an apparent time loop. And I'm like, but... So I literally had to go back. I was like, okay, wait. So were these two actresses the same ones in the beginning? Are we seeing that time loop? No. Mm-mm. They are played by different actresses. Mm-hmm. So the mirror grants her wish by making them the Weatherford sisters. Oh, sorry, Weatherworth sisters somehow.
Yes.
But then when it gets to the present day, who's going to be Megan and Nikki?
Well, I think what you're meant to assume is that that won't ever happen because... Now that Nikki is in the past, she will make sure that the mirror doesn't possess anybody, because that's why she covers it up, right? So the film ends with her saying, okay, I'm going to control this power. Sure, my whole fucking life is now ruined. Everyone that I have loved is dead. I am trapped in the past.
Yeah, I'm trapped in the past. That really sucks.
But apparently, yay, the evil is contained.
I mean, I watched this and I was like, what? Like, mm-hmm. What? What?
Oh, it is baffling. It is audacious. It makes no fucking sense. And I kind of applaud the movie for taking this big fucking swing.
It is audacious. I will give you that. I mean, this is going to be more conventional. I would have preferred just like, okay, Nikki gets up to Megan, the demon comes out, they have to fight the demon.
Right.
But that's conventional, right? Like, that's yes. not... It's
and also,
satisfying.
We don't have the budget for that.
And that may honestly be what it is. Like, I can almost guarantee you that was the original ending of this movie, and they were like, oh, we're out of money.
Mm-hmm. Look, we gave you one dad who's got a melty face, and then we've got just enough budget left over to give you burnt tits and whatever this thing that crawls out is.
Yeah.
That's all.
And wind. Lots of fans.
And lots of fans, yeah. The fans come cheap.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't like this ending because I don't even think that they know what it is.
It definitely feels like, okay, what's something that we can do that we can afford, that we have the time, rather, to shoot? And
right.
I don't think it's satisfying, but it is memorable.
No, you are correct in that. Absolutely correct. But yeah, I think I was kind of like, still like, oh, do I want to give it a 3 or a 3.5? And this was like, no, it's 3.
Like, it was a 3. Fuck you, 3.
I have issues with this movie. I do think the first half is a lot stronger than the second half.
Yes.
But... I still like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, yeah, as we both said twice, it's a hearty recommend. Like, if you haven't seen this movie, check it out. It's a strange one.
Yeah. We didn't really know what to expect going into this, and it could have been a raging dumpster fire. And I've come out of it with some kind of admiration. It makes me wish that a lot of the people who worked on this film had better careers so that we could see what else they were doing. Because I think this film is actually well shot. I think it's well acted.
Yeah.
I would have liked to see what they could do with a bigger budget and more special effects. But overall, I'm happy to have watched this.
I agree with what you're saying about the directing, the acting, the shooting. I do think the score is a little not good.
Ooh, you'll die. I saw someone reference that it's kind of like a Christopher Young Hellraiser, and I just thought,
See, no. I was getting more Charles Band, like, Puppet Master. That's what I was getting from this.
Right, yes. One of these actresses, I think it might be the woman who plays Charlene, actually is from one of the Puppet Master films.
It is. She's in Puppet Master 2.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I only bring that up because we just, you and me, for shits and giggles, just rewatched Ginger Dead Man, and mm-hmm. It was giving me those kind of vibes.
Oh, you mean the score?
The score,
okay,
yeah.
I was like, oh no, this is a much better film.
No. I yes, 100%. Ginger Dead Man is a 60-minute movie that feels like 5 hours long. but the score, it's that Charles Band. Like,
yeah.
It's not good. And so that's what this reminded me of.
Maybe they got someone on retainer.
Yeah, Moonlight Pictures or whatever. But yeah, listeners, let us know what you thought of this. I mean, I wager for most of you, it's probably going to be a first-time watch, but I'm also curious to know about the people that grew up with this.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Joe and I did not, but if this was a cable mainstay for you or a video store regular rental for you, I'm really curious to hear those stories. So please, like, share them with us.
Yes, especially if you happen to be at a younger age and maybe watch this at, like, a slumber party or something like that. I would love to know how this goes down.
100%. But yeah, so I think that'll kind of close out Mirror Mirror for us. We don't often walk into these with no idea what to expect, Joe. So this was kind of a fun one to visit together.
For sure.
But before we announce what we're covering next week, we'll go through some standard housekeeping. So, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can reach us on Twitter and Instagram at Horror Queers. Join our Facebook Horror Queers group to hang out with other listeners and occasionally interact with us.
Just occasionally. We're not on there very often.
I mean, I'll reply to things that I feel compelled to reply to, which sometimes it's a lot. It depends on my mood.
Right.
You can also find us on Letterboxd to keep track of all the films we've covered. We've got lists for our main feed films, Patreon films, audio commentaries, microqueers, just basically we want to make a checklist for all of our episodes. And finally, we've got a YouTube channel, so go check that out to watch some of our videotaped microqueers episodes.
Oh my god, we're like direct-to-video.
Yes, exactly. If you have a moment, please rate and review us on your podcatcher of choice. We, at least in the States, we have almost 400 reviews on Apple Podcasts. We need about 12 more. So if 12 of you want to go write us a review on Apple Podcasts, preferably 5 stars, we'd really appreciate it.
Wouldn't that be sweet?
It would be great. And if you want even more Horror Queers content, please support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/horrorqueers. So this month we've got a ghosts and zombies theme. We'll have episodes on new film Seance and Army of the Dead with episode, I guess I'm going to call them classic episodes. No.
Complimentary.
Oh, yeah.
Complimentary classics.
And complimentary episodes for those films on Ouija Origin of Evil and Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead remake. So yeah, I think it's going to be what we're doing it right now. It's really fun. Subscribe and listen. Joe.
Yes.
What are we checking out next week?
Okay, so we went a little bit obscure this week, so we're going to go a little bit more popular, but we are going to stay in the 90s, Trace.
My favorite.
I feel like I want to stick it with this high school motif, but I think I'm worried about aliens. So let's talk about The Faculty.
Ooh. First R-rated movie I ever saw in my life.
Oh.
Yes, I love this movie. I did just rewatch it recently, and I'm actually excited to watch it again. So
cool. Yeah, I have very fond memories of this film. I'm interested to cover it because I feel like we're also the last podcast on Earth to cover it. Like, I've seen every other podcast I listen to do it. So we'll see if we have anything left to talk about.
You know, it was filmed in Austin.
Oh, was it? Oh, that makes sense. Because
Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, there we go.
But yeah, well, I'm excited to check out The Faculty with you and our listeners. But until then, we can cross out Mirror Mirror.
Indeed, yes. And cross out Horror Queers.
You've made it to the end of another bloody disgusting podcast. Congratulations.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM Podcast Network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.